This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right, welcome to the Chelsea Supporters Trust special general meeting, our first of the new season. And in particular, welcome to our new board, who I will whiz around and quickly introduce. This is Cliff Auger, our secretary Paul Jeffrey, Celia Mindelson, Dan Silver, Dave Johnson, Richard Weeks, who am I missing? Chris Rayburn, Debs Cody, and Charles Jackson. And Ramsey's appeared, who's now just been co-opted. So we're all here, which is very nice. One of the things that I wanted to just have a very quick chat about, because I'm just going to waffle on for a couple of minutes and leave most of the talk to everybody else, really. But since I got elected as chair, we've had a couple of board meetings. And one of the things that we felt we needed to address was how we can more effectively progress our work on the motions that you all voted on in the summer. And basically that gives us our mandate going forward in terms of what we do. So we had a bit of a think, and what we agreed on was to set up various working groups which will cover most of the motions which are quite similar in nature. So if I just kind of quickly run through what the groups are, what they cover, and who's going to be heading them and working on them. And then I'm going to get the respective heads to have a little chat in terms of what they've been up to therein. But we have the Atmosphere Working Group, which is headed by Richard Weeks. And he works together with Dave Johnson on that. And that covers, amazingly enough, all issues relating to Atmosphere, but also Safe Standing, which, you know, is a standalone motion that was voted on by you guys. We've got a supporters issues working group, which is headed by Cliff Auger, and he works with Chris Rayburn, Charles Jackson, and Dave Johnson again. And basically, they cover ticketing, touting, allocations, kickoff times, and banning orders. We have a Stamford Bridge redevelopment working group, which is headed by Dave, and I kind of work together with Dave on that as well. And that covers, obviously, the redevelopment. But also, going forward, it'll be dealing with the temporary move, wherever that may be. We have an affiliations working group, which is headed by Cliff. And I work with him on that. And Debs Cody. And that covers the kind of groups that we are allied to and work together with, where we quite often get involved with ad hoc campaigns. But specifically, that will include Supporters Direct, the Football Supporters Federation, the CPO, of course, and the Safety Advisory Group. And also, one thing that we're quite keen to do more with at the moment, and that's to kind of ally ourselves with and communicate with and engage with all of the UK-based Chelsea supporters groups. And finally, in terms of working groups, we've got the Community Engagement Working Group, which is headed by Cliff again, and he works with Chris Rayburn and Debs Cody on that, and they cover stakeholder engagement, community work, Chelsea Heritage, so like the Brompton Cemetery work that Cliff and the others have been doing, and also local businesses and local government. And I'm sure the guys will tell you a little bit more specifically in terms of what they've been doing in relation to all of those things. I mean, the main thing I think from our point of view was that, you know, other than really focusing on what is most important, which are the issues which you voted on, which creates the mandate that we have, I think it was also important to you know, spread the load around, really. I got the feeling over the last 3 years, whilst the Trust had done an awful lot of good work, and, you know, we should, again, thank Tim very much for his leadership on that. But I think what happened was it was boiling down to maybe just two or three people doing most of the work. So I think we were all keen that everybody got more involved, and I think also, more importantly, took more responsibility for what they were doing. So really, hopefully, what the working groups will do is it will give more responsibility, accountability, visibility, and accessibility. So there's a lot of abilities in there. But of course, all the people who are running them have great ability, so I have complete confidence in them. Ah, that's my worst gag so far this evening. They will probably get worse, actually. But more importantly, you know, I think that whole visibility and accessibility is important. And Debs, who works very hard on the website and has pretty much turned the whole thing around in the last 6 months, and it deserves enormous credit for doing that. We've also set up more kind of individual emails for the Trust now. So, you know, you should be able to get hold of any one of us very, very easily and hopefully get an answer out of us very, very quickly. That, of course, is the plan. Just another quick mention, really, for other people in terms of what they're doing. We've got Dan Silver, who's heading up an initiative to engage with the overseas supporters who... we have many overseas supporters who support the Trust and have done since its inception, particularly Beth and Chelsea in America, who's pretty much signed up every single one of the chapters to the Trust, which is great. But they have, as you can imagine, very, very different requirements and needs from us. Rather than really focusing on most what is important issues, which are the voted, which you've created on, which the mandate we hand out, that I have. There's also, I think it wasn't too important to, you know, spread the load. I am really feeling over. Got the 3 years of the last the trial as well. An awful lot of work, a lot of good, and we should, you know. So she will be battering their ears, hopefully on a, what is it, three meetings a year, Debs?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So Debs is still our fans forum representative, and of course she does all of the website and the social media. So there we go. I think that's probably enough from me, other than to say I think we should raise a toast, or I'm going to raise a toast to Matthew Harding, in fact, as my first Guinness of the day to Matthew Harding.
Matthew Harding.
Right. I know. Well, I've been busy, mate. You know, all this kind of Trust stuff and Kerry and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, and they run out of Guinness in the cock, so I'm not happy. That's not a euphemism.
Oh, they don't usually have it.
That's probably why they'd run out then.
Yeah.
They didn't tell me that at the time. Okay, so really for the next kind of 20 minutes or so, you're going to hear from Richard, Cliff and Dave, and they're going to give you a little report on what they've been up to in terms of their respective working groups. And then after that, I mean, I think the other thing I should really say is that within that, any of the big hot issues at the moment, which I'm sure many of you are keen to know more about, such as what's happening with West Ham, will be included in that. We're then going to do 20 minutes or so on the membership survey. Celia's going to present the key points from the summary, aren't you? That will be released to the membership at the end of this week, fingers crossed, and to the usual outlets as well. Now, after that, if we could have about 10, no more than 15 minutes for any questions that you want from the floor to any one of us, we will do our best to answer them. So if you could kind of store them up to the end, rather than do them as we go along, I'd be very grateful. It's just that time is really tight tonight, obviously, because we've got Kerry doing the book signing, and hopefully he'll do a little bit of a Q&A with you as well. So I don't really want us to witter on too much, although I'm conscious of the fact that the point of these meetings is that you get a chance to actually engage with us. That's entirely their point, so I won't restrict that. So enough from me. Richard, good evening. Richard's going to tell you all about the atmosphere and safe standing.
How long is this thing?
It goes all the way to the back, but I don't expect you to go that far.
Right. Zach, can you hear me? Is it working okay?
It's just recording.
It's not projected. No, but I meant, is it working? Anyway, hello. I guess, just to sort of keep it short and sharp, I guess, me and Dave have had a meeting with, our first meeting with the club since the new board was formed. We had a meeting with Buck just to sort of really lay down sort of our first initial points about trying to sort of, I don't know, discuss the atmosphere. It's a difficult topic to try and pinpoint and also to try and really improve on, I suppose, because where do you start? I think the main point of the meeting that we had with Buck a few weeks ago was really to, the club seemed to do a lot of displays in the Matthew Harding end without any sort of negotiation with supporters, and quite often we get sort of slated in the, you know, in social media about the plastic flags and this, that and the other. And I think one of the points we wanted to try and make was that the club need to try and start actually going to groups of supporters and sort of discussing plans and trying to get their thoughts on things like that. Because if it's just coming from some marketing guy, I don't think they're always going to fully understand what is a good Chelsea display. I mean, it's maybe my personal opinion, but that light display that happened at Liverpool, we got ridiculed for as well. And you've got the guy in marketing who's sort of reeling off on social media saying how great it was. But I think quite a lot of people felt a little bit, maybe it was a bit cringy. That's my personal opinion. But, I mean, that's the main point, is to try and get the club to talk with supporters more often about the things they want to do. Also, is I want to try and get the club to outline all of the sort of restrictions that they put on supporters. So, for example, flagpole size, which has stopped my group, the We Are The Shed group, from taking in flags. They never actually give us a solid reason. They just stop supporters from doing things, and I think it's important that they at least give us what their logical explanation is, even if it's not necessarily logical. They always just seem to bat us away. I think we've got another meeting set up in the next couple of weeks with head of ticketing, head of security, and Bruce Buck again, to sort of reiterate a few of the points that we sort of underlined in the last meeting, to make sure that the club are progressing with it and asking the right questions of the people in charge. I think another thing that I want to start doing is, again, it sort of ties in with the email address thing, is that when we do go to have a meeting, I think it would be nice that if people want to put something forward to the, to Bruce Buck, for example, about atmosphere, they can email us. We're not necessarily going to take it to them, but, if we feel it's relevant and feel it's an important point, it'd be something that we could, it gives the members, I think, an opportunity to sort of have a, part of that dialogue, I suppose. The last thing is as well, I've forgotten the last thing. Oh, yeah. So safe standing. We contacted, 1884 got in contact with us, didn't they? The Man City group, about having their legalised safe standing banner at Stamford Bridge or an away game. We did chase them, but they didn't come back to us. So I don't know where they've gone. But I think it would be a good idea to sort of start working with other sort of active supporters groups within Chelsea and outside Chelsea to try and bring home points that all football supporters care about, really. So things like legalised safe standing. Dave, did you want to... You look busy there. Did you want to add anything on safe standing? Because I know that you deal with the more sort of stadium side of things. Okay.
The only thing I was going to add is that, after the big fans forum meeting where they presented the plans for the stadium, we did release a statement after that, which kind of focused on what appeared to be their lack of progress, call it what you will. I mean, actually, downright hostility, in fact, in some respects, to safe standing. So we were very quick to put a statement out on that point, reiterating the fact that that's fundamentally what we want. And it's interesting, actually, that the pitch seems to have queered a little bit since then, and we're not quite sure what's coming out. So, I mean, we as the Trust, will be meeting with the club pretty soon after the survey goes out next week. So that's obviously something that we'll want to talk about, because I have no doubt that safe standing will come strongly through the survey, as it always does.
Yes. I agree. I don't really have anything else to add, because it is sort of early doors with this sort of, the working group on atmosphere. And like I said, we have got another meeting set up with the club very soon. So who are we passing on to next?
I believe. If you're done, thank you, Richard.
I am.
Yeah, that was great. I'll grab that when you grab
it. Okay. Hi, I just sort of add to what Richard was saying there, and I think he's done himself and Dave down a little bit, because the shed... campaign that Richard runs, they were solely it was solely their idea to put the recent shed banners on to celebrate the 50th anniversary, and that all came from Richard's lead, and it was all fan funded as well. And also today's display for Matthew Harding it was done in conjunction with the fans, and I thought it was really good. So well done, Dave and Richard, for both of that. Yeah, it's pretty good. Just going on to the supporters' issues, one that I'm running here. I was going to say it's quite heartening that the Metropolitan Police come to us for a meeting about contentious games. Well, I don't know if heartening is the right word, but we had a meeting recently with the police regarding the forthcoming West Ham game. And just I might add that fair play to Chelsea Football Club on in respect to this. They held out for the full allocation that we were due at Upton Park at the Olympic Stadium, which would have been 5,700. West Ham have only given us 5,200, citing various issues that they can't give us the full allocation. But Chelsea and Graham Smith, the ticketing director, firmly pushed for that right up to the last minute. So well done to them on that, although we didn't actually get it. Now, obviously, the police think there might be some issues there on Wednesday night with 5,200 Chelsea fans over there, and I'm pretty sure there will be one way or another. One of the biggest issues I think that's come to light since the meeting that we had is that there will only be 8 turnstiles available to Chelsea fans going in that night for 5,200 people. So if I could give you an example of it, how it works at Stamford Bridge, when away fans have the whole of the shed end, which is just under 6,000, they get 20 turnstiles. So... That's right, yeah. The League Cup allocation now is 10%. It's gone down to 10%. FA Cup is still 15%. So, it was new rules that come in. I don't know if Arsenal pushed for those new rules, but new rules came in. And if West Ham have an FA Cup home draw, Christ knows how they're going to get on with 15% over there, because that would be the thick end of 9,000 people. Pardon? No, FA Cup 15%, yeah. FA Cup 15, League Cup 10. So, so Chelsea, regarding the West Ham game, Chelsea are going to be putting stuff out on Monday. They're encouraging people to be in their seats 30 minutes before the kickoff. That's in their seats, not outside trying to get in, but in their seats. And I think it's going to be pretty damn chaotic. People coming from work straight to the game or whatever. But if any of you are going, get there early or else you're going to miss kickoff for sure. The club have invited one of our reps to go along and observe that, because I don't know if any of you remember talking about the Arsenal game. It was pretty chaotic getting in over there on the evening. So they've taken on board that there might be the same sort of chaos for Wednesday evening. They've invited one of our reps, and Dan's going along with the club people, the security people, and Graham Smith to observe what's going on. He'll be there before and after the game to see what's going on. Martin?
Is there any leeway for a delayed
kickoff? I'd say no, because if it goes to, it could conceivably go to extra time and penalties, it's going to be even more chaotic, and that's when I think the chaos will kick in on Wednesday after the game, where they're directing everyone back to Stratford. You know, and especially if there is extra time and penalties, people want to get home. It's going to be so. Touch wood. I hope everything goes well and there's no bother and everyone gets home and we win, of course. That's always something that they have for any game. They've got that ability to keep away fans in, and he didn't dismiss it. The senior copper over there, he didn't dismiss it. He didn't say it was going to happen for sure, but it's something that could happen, and hopefully it doesn't. Ramsey.
Okay. I heard yesterday that Sunderland fans were kept in 20 to 30 minutes, and there's only more, I don't know, if they had the full allocation, 3,000 of them.
As far as I'm aware, they had the full 3,000. I didn't know they've been kept in after
true,
the game.
Then there isn't any doubt they're going to keep us in for bloody ages. Mm.
We are working on a kickoff time. Tim Rowles is still working with the trust and with other supporters' trusts across the country. He's doing a kickoff times initiative with other trusts at the moment, which as we all know, you know, it's a pain in the backside when Sky move the games, and you know, you can't get sort of rail tickets well in advance. Silly kickoff times where you know, to be fair, when Liverpool came down here for a Friday night game, it's just we played at Burnley on a Monday night a few years ago, and I think the general consensus is from most people that if they're going to do a midweek game that's live on TV, why don't they do it within a 100-mile radius of the club that's playing? At least then you've got the chance to get back on public transport, or if you're driving, it's only an hour and a half, 2 hours journey at the most, rather than being 3 or 4 hours, you know, some godforsaken northern hellhole. Yeah. Right, I think that's me covered for that particular issue. I don't think I've got anything more to say about that, but if any of you have got more questions about West Ham, ask away or ask later. Debs, is there anything you want to add to that? Sorry.
No, it's just that with the information that's actually on the website, I just tweeted the link.
Oh, good stuff. Okay. Thanks. Handing over to...
Yeah, I was just going to add that, I mean, obviously, you know, the supporter issues working group is probably the most kind of reactive of all the groups that we have, because, you know, it tends to be very much concerned with issues that hit the supporters on a kind of almost game-to-game basis. So, you know, a lot of it's firefighting and dealing with the club about issues like the West Ham issues that Cliff was talking about. But, you know, he's right to mention the whole kickoff thing, which Tim is... I mean, he started before he left the board, and because he has great links with supporters direct because of his chairmanship, we decided it was a good idea for that to carry on. But there are other things that which we can take a longer-term view and get involved with a bit of planning, and we will, of course, A, be doing that, and, of course, B, we'll always be keeping you informed of what we're up to in that kind of respect. Is that fair enough, Cliff?
Yeah.
Okay, so who have we got next? We've got... Dave, on the Stamford Bridge redevelopment. Do you want to grab Ramsey's mic, mate?
Hello, David Johnson calling. As we know, the redevelopment of Stamford Bridge is progressing. On a personal note, I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I think it's pretty much agreed by all the board members and most of the actual membership that everyone's behind the redevelopment, save the issue on safe standing. As far as I'm aware, the planning permissions are progressing nicely. The question of safe standing has arisen, as alluded to earlier. And I think Chelsea are somewhat reticent to implement it. But as a board, we've discussed this several times. Chelsea aren't a club that take the lead, but rather one that follows. And I'm sure that if the regulation, as opposed to legislation, changes, and... the first Premier League club introduces safe standing, I'm sure there'll be a domino effect, because nobody will want to be seen to be left behind. And there is provision in the lower tiers behind the goal for safe standing. Other than that, I think the redevelopment is absolutely fantastic. I'm very fortunate that... I know quite a bit about it for various reasons, which is why Chidge has asked me to handle this particular brief. And on a personal note, I think it's absolutely fantastic. It's brilliant. As I said at the last meeting, the main man behind it, Hugh Rosen, who some of you might have met at the CPO meeting when they had a display of the model, and who Debs Cody met at the recent fans forum, which was specially called to discuss the stadium, is a Chelsea supporter. He's an ex-shed boy, and he's 100% in favour of 99% of the things that we as a trust are interested in. We're going to have the price of the ticket isn't going to increase. People are going to have the chance to remain where they are, which a lot of people have aired their concerns to me about. It's going to be absolutely fantastic, and I hope everybody's 100% behind it. It's brilliant. And I know that should there be any problem with the planning permission and this build does not go ahead, there isn't a plan B, so we won't be moving away from Stamford Bridge, which is, in my view anyway, the main thing. I'd rather struggle along in a 42,000-seater stadium as we are and remain as Chelsea Football Club, Stamford Bridge, the Fulham Road, than go anywhere else. And it's all tickety-boo.
Dave, just a quick question. Are we, I mean, do we have any more information other than what we heard at the fans forum meeting about, you know, likely timescales for planning permission? And because, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, nothing's really going to happen until there's planning permission, I would assume.
Well, the plan was initially to start the redevelopment at the end of this season. It might well be the end of next season. They're going to start by demolishing the health club, which is situated behind the Matthew Harding end, and they're going to build across the railway lines, and then they'll take it from there. The only, I won't call it bone of contention, but the only question that is up in the air at the moment is where we will play while Stamford Bridge is being redeveloped. And there are some questions that have arisen. There's some concerns that people have raised. And myself, Chidge, no doubt Cliff, will be taking them to Chelsea Football Club. Those concerns include ticket sales, meeting for away games, if you know, if you travel on club travel. I'm not, on a personal note, I don't think there's any chance of Chelsea compensating anybody for travel to Wembley. The fact is, whilst Chelsea have got Mr. Abramovich again, sorry, I'm going to have to he won't leave me alone. whilst Chelsea have got a megastore in Kingston, because according to their demographic, that's where a lot of Chelsea supporters live. We all know that Chelsea supporters are situated all over the place. So for us who are fairly local, or, you know, we're in West London, you know, we're happy to come to Stamford Bridge. But I'm sure if Chelsea go to Wembley, those who live in North London will be just as pleased. So, you know, it's sort of a bit of give and take, in my opinion. But, you know, if you, the membership, want to send us on a different route, we'll take up the mantle for you. But if you do, I'll give you my best thoughts, what I think's the best advice. But nevertheless, it's up to the membership to decide what you'd like us to say. I think, as I said, I'm over the moon that we're staying here. And if I can just add this, I think if you can all buy a Chelsea pitch owner's share and ensure that we, the supporters, keep a grip on what happens at Stamford Bridge, it will secure the future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. That's good stuff. Right, now I'm going to pass on to Cliff, who has the next two slots, actually. He's going to talk about affiliations first and the work that we're doing in the community after that.
Right, the affiliation section basically covers the meetings we have with Supporters Direct, the Football Supporters Federation, and various other supporters trusts. It can be quite dry stuff, but there are some good things coming out of it, and a lot of the meetings that we've had over the last few years have directly led to the £30 cap on the away tickets. So, you know, that's an ongoing issue about ticket prices in general, but it's a start. So there is a lot of work going on at the moment. I don't know if some of you might have noticed that it was an MP elected to the what's it called, the working group, Paul?
Select committee.
The select committee, yeah. Damien Collins was recently elected to head it up, and he's very, very pro football fan. He's very pro safe standing, and he's very up on the governance of football. I mean, the trusts in the Premier League certainly probably don't hold too many aspirations to taking over their team and, you know, buying out all the shares or whatever, or buying out the owner and running it. But there is a lot of aspiration that they get a seat on the board to give the supporters proper representation at the top of the club level. And Damien Collins is very much in favour of that. So hopefully in the next few years we'll have some good movement on that. We recently, for the second year running, had an event with the Playfair Qatar people who were down here for the Leicester game, just a photo opportunity where they had a banner and we unfurled it, and they took photos which went out in the media and on various websites just in support of the workers that are being treated pretty much as slave labour in the building of the stadiums for the Qatar World Cup. As Chidge mentioned, we're looking to sort of grow our affiliations with all the UK supporters groups around the country, and that's an ongoing thing that we hope to take up in the next few months. And obviously, Dan is concentrating on the overseas groups. Don't think I've got anything more to add about affiliations, unless there's any questions about them. No. The last bit for me is about the community issues we've been doing, and I'm quite passionate about this. We've been over at Brompton Cemetery. It sounds a bit weird, I suppose, but we've been cleaning up the graves of all the Chelsea-related people over there, and there are quite a few of the founding fathers of Chelsea Football Club buried at Brompton Cemetery, and probably a lot of you walked by and may have seen the Mears Memorial over there, which is on the main avenue through the cemetery. But there are two or three others tucked away that were badly overgrown and badly maintained. And we, over the last year or so, I guess, we've really brought them back into a good shape. And it's all hopefully leading up to an event that we plan for Founders Day next year on the 10th of March that... We're in conjunction with Rick Glanville, the Chelsea historian, over this, and he's offered to do some guided tours of the graveyard and explain exactly what role the people had that are buried over there. And he's recently uncovered a Chelsea player that was buried over there in an unmarked plot. Apparently this guy, Jack Whitley, he was a goalkeeper who took over from Fatty Falk back in the day. And he was a real Chelsea stalwart. He played a lot of games for the club. He left when he stopped playing. He became a trainer and physio at the club. And he, all in all, he gave about 30 years service to Chelsea. And when he died up in Hertfordshire. He asked specifically to be buried in West Brompton so he could be near to Stamford Bridge. I say Rick's recently uncovered the unmarked plot that he's in, and we cleared that recently. And we hope in the next few months or so, or a few weeks or so, to get some sort of crowdfunding to get fundraising initiative that we can put some sort of headstone or slab there to mark where he's buried. Don't think. Oh, the other thing, we hope to get an initiative to go in to reach out to local businesses and local pubs that encourage Chelsea fans to go in. And some of the pubs you get a bit funny. They let people in before the game, and then they don't want you back in there after the game. They cite the fact there's a public private function going on, but basically just don't want Chelsea fans in there after the game. So we're keen to sort of name and shame pubs like that and encourage people to go to Chelsea pubs like the Atlas here, which is a decent pub, a bit pricey, but
well, what do you qualify as
pricey? Well, you know, over £2 a pint is pricey.
Maybe you're cheap.
Yeah. But you know, and again, the pubs and the clubs, pubs and restaurants and cafes and whatever around this area are going to suffer when Chelsea move away for 3 years. So hopefully we can bring them on board. Where if Chelsea fans are in the area, they can go and use them, whether Chelsea playing or not. But just to keep the sort of momentum going and hope that there's a lot of pubs and restaurants still available when we return to Stamford Bridge. So that's sorry for hogging it so much, but that's about all from me. Unless there's any questions you want to raise about anything. No. Okay. Good stuff.
Yeah. Well done, Cliff. Very overworked, but not underappreciated. I just kind of like put a line under what Cliff was saying about the affiliations. Of course, you know, being involved in the kind of the. I mean, actually, I think he mentioned the £30 cap on away tickets, didn't he? And, you know, that absolutely came through a lot of the supporters' trusts, you know, getting together, particularly under the Premier League umbrella, because they meet with Scudamore fairly regularly. And I think really it proved that if actually we do get together as, you know, as a whole and campaign on a lot of these issues, we can actually make some big wins. And that was a very good example. So therefore, it's very important for us as a trust to be in amongst that, being involved with them and helping them and forcing through some of these issues, which obviously are very important to all of us here. The other thing I'd say about affiliations, of course, is that the most important affiliation we probably have is with the Chelsea pitch owners, which Dave mentioned a minute ago. And we do, you know, talk to several of the board there quite regularly. And obviously, with everything that's coming up, there'll be a board meeting, there'll be an AGM there, I suspect, in January, as there usually is. You know, I cannot stress how important that is to support the CPO. And if you haven't already bought a share, buy one. But obviously, we'll be doing all we can to put our members' viewpoints towards the CPO and to helping them out. And on the community thing, I mean, Cliff's work, I mean, he wouldn't say it himself, but I mean, I know it's a labour of love, but what he's helped to organise down at Brompton Cemetery is nothing short of remarkable, and it's an incredibly worthwhile effort. It's great because it protects the heritage and the history of the club, and we're all part of that as supporters, but I think it also has quite an impact on the place itself and the community. So actually, I'd like you all to give Cliff a massive round of applause for sorting that out. And yeah, I agree about the pubs and the restaurants there. That's something that's very important, particularly if we're going to be moving away, because then I think they might realise how much they'll miss us if they're not careful. So anything we can do to mitigate that will be great. So enough of me. I'd like to introduce Celia to you, who's going to present the highlights of this year's membership survey. Okay. And right, remember, you have to hit this close, Celia. Imagine it's a lollipop or something.
Okay, so the survey, thank you very much, first of all, to all of those that filled it out. We got a fantastic response rate from our voting members, 44% response, which is pretty amazing. I think the clubs send out a survey and they're lucky if they get like 7% or something, I think. It's quite small. So, absolutely amazing response. And overall, amongst all our members, there was a kind of 25% response rate. So it is very representative of the people that belong to the trust. If you remember, we sent it out at the end of the season, and it was open for a month. And we made a few changes. It's the fourth survey that we've done. We've made a few changes. What we try to do is to kind of freshen it up with things that are current issues, maybe sometimes just tweak it so that we get a truer view of some of the aspects that we ask about. I think, you know, we've excluded people now that don't go to games for asking them about things like ticket prices and stuff because you know, they just spend their lives filling out what's applicable and is pretty boring for them. So, but this year, what we've done was we had a section about the potential temporary stadium move, and also we asked some more questions about, you know, it's a distant memory now, but about the ticket collection in Europe as well, which you know,
not relevant.
Just for next time, you know, next season, you never. So the thing is with the survey, it is always a snapshot.
I think, Dave, if he wants people to sign books now, let him just do
it. That's the last five. Then.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Sorry, Celia.
It's okay. So inevitably, a survey is a snapshot of how people are feeling at the time. But the results of the survey overall reflect the unsuccessful season we had last season. So for the first time ever, ticket prices and atmosphere, although they were ranked very highly as the most as important issues for supporters, they were knocked off by on-pitch success with
lack of,
well, you know, what was important. And sort of almost related categories of youth player development, which is always fairly highly, but transfer policy and management stability. So those were the kind of major things. There's a little printout of the summary here as well for you. But interestingly, despite the on-pitch difficulties and parting company with Mourinho, whoever he was, the satisfaction with the club administration was only slightly down on last year. So when we first started doing the surveys, it was very, very low. And it's kind of climbed up and reached a kind of little sort of plateau now. So in general, you know, they still haven't crossed over the satisfied barrier, but people are more or less satisfied with the club administration. And the type of questions we ask are things like, how do we feel about their PR? Do we feel they're engaging with supporters? Do they have a strategy for the future? And you know, these have been climbing slightly, and I like to think that partly it's you know, because they have engaged with the trust, and we have been doing the survey, that we're able to pass on information from our members, so that they have a better idea and perhaps a better steer of you know, how they can do things without alienating us too much. One of the things that came out, we did ask a question this year about the supporter liaison officer. So I don't know if you know, but I think all clubs in the Premier League, is that right?
Yeah.
Are supposed to have a supporter liaison officer. It's okay. And I'm clearing the room. and Chelsea's is Graham Smith, the box office manager. And we asked if people were aware that we had one, and also if they knew who it was or how to contact them. And very disappointingly, less than 5% of people that responded to the survey knew the name, knew about Graham or how to contact him. So I think that's some work to be done for us to try to persuade the club that they should really, really make that role much stronger. And in fact, they are supposed to be independent of the club. So it's not something that's kind of tacked onto somebody else's day job. I mean, I guess it's obvious that the members welcomed the away ticket cap. And over 60% of people that responded said they'd now attend more away games. However, people were concerned that it would be even more difficult to obtain tickets to go to away games. And also, there's an underlying concern. There's always a rumble about loyalty points. But there really is an underlying concern there about people, because tickets are less expensive, people purchasing tickets without any intention of going, just so that they can achieve more, you know, gain more loyalty points for finals, etc. And I think that's something that maybe we should revisit, is the whole loyalty point issue again. I mean, I have a lot of sympathy with the club. In terms of allocation of loyalty points, they seem to be between the devil and the deep blue sea. But I think with tickets being so inexpensive, and I've anecdotally I heard that the Leicester League Cup game that people, you know, they sold out pretty quickly, but there were empty seats. So I don't know. People are obviously still concerned about pricing. And again, this kind of grows every year. Maybe people are, you know, growing up and having families and stuff. But the availability of juvenile tickets and where they can sit continues and is growing as an issue among our supporters. I mean, this is for members, obviously, because they're in very short supply, basically. You can only sit in East Lower with them. And by extending the age group means that they don't necessarily want to go and sit with all the kiddies, people in their late teens. But also there are very few tickets available in the East Lower for these concessions. There are also some issues around concessions at the other end of the scale with pensioners, where they're not really taking note of women currently being able to retire early, being on a pension earlier. And also, I think they're in East Upper, which is a crazy pace for somebody whose years are advancing a bit to get to get all the way up there. I think the idea of the pricing of tickets is a concern really as well related to atmosphere. And again, there continues to be a demand for a price category for young adults. I mean, the club has always rejected this as being too difficult to, mainly their excuse is that it's too difficult to administer. But if other clubs are able to do this, then, you know, I think maybe one of the things that we could do is to look at best practice elsewhere and perhaps come up with a suggestion about how they could administer it. As I said, we asked about move to a temporary stadium, and basically we guessed where potential destinations might be. So I think Twickenham might be off the agenda, but we said Twickenham, Wembley and Stratford. Across the board, most respondents said that that the time and or cost of travel would increase for them. I mean, you know, as Dave was saying about the demographic with the megastore and everything, the best place would actually be Twickenham in terms of the demographic.
Chidge.
JK, in all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live, it's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep. NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow. Great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Jidge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/ChelseaFancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Demographic in that most people probably live in the sort of southwest of London, so it's not so difficult to get to. But both Wembley and Stratford would involve most supporters in more cost and more time to travel. Most people said that they would still continue to attend. It wouldn't stop them continuing to attend weekend games. But I think midweek does become an issue, particularly for Stratford, but for Wembley as well, that it's a you know, a trek to get back home afterwards. I do think there was a feeling that the club should price tickets where, you know, for a temporary stay-in to take account of the fact that people are incurring extra cost to actually travel to those locations. There were also questions about concerns raised about, as Dave said, about travel, you know, club travel, if it's, where's that going to be based from, if we, you know, for away games. And similarly, things like ticket collection, box office, all that sort of thing, because obviously trucking up to Wembley to go and get your, I don't know, maybe not your European tickets, would inconvenience people even more than perhaps going to Stamford Bridge now. That brings me on to the European ticket collection. People were very complimentary about the way in which Chelsea managed the collection of tickets, that people were very, very attentive and helpful and everything else. And quite surprisingly, really, most agreed that the collection was convenient, so they didn't incur a lot of extra cost or they didn't feel that it was too out of the way. However, the majority said that the process just ate into the time that they would normally spend socializing. But things like the timing and stuff, people were happy with that it was open for a long time. So, you know, if we get back to Europe again, that will be interesting to see. We did ask people about the podcast and about attendance at the Supporters Trust meetings, and that was quite a good ruse, because even though it's in the newsletters and we tweet it, people weren't necessarily aware that we broadcast the meetings, or else we have the virtual general meetings as well. So I think that's kind of increased awareness of them, and most people said, oh, I didn't know, and yes, you know, you would definitely download them. Atmosphere, I think we ask every year what people think what would improve the atmosphere, and it is really the same thing, you know, safe standing, sections of like-minded supporters being together, this idea about the young person's tickets and moving juveniles, and also moving away supporters, which I guess isn't going to happen until we move. People really have appreciated the work that Richard and David have put into working with the club to improve the atmosphere, some of the displays that there have been before games and everything. Those were really appreciated, and people did really feel that they were improving the atmosphere. We asked about the ticket exchange as well, and that seems to be working quite well, but people had some quite specific suggestions for it, which I think when we talk to the club, we will actually bring a list of those suggestions with them. So one assumes that they look to update the system that they have for ticket sales periodically. So I hope that the suggestions that you've all put forward can be used to improve the working of the ticket exchange. And then really finally is the issue with overseas supporters. So we asked them about things that we thought might be important to them, like kickoff times, availability of matches on the TV, merchandise. We more or less got the same answers as last year. I think merchandising outside of the UK, they use separate merchants for it, and there isn't such a wide range of products, and that seems to be something that really they don't like. They would like to be able to buy things, you know, have the same range of products. TV broadcast, brilliant. I think the only problem is things like the League Cup games. Some of the, you know, and maybe some of the FA Cup games aren't always broadcast. I think they're long suffering with the kickoff times. They're used to having to get up in the middle of the night or something to watch us. And I think, you know, there is an issue about things like loyalty points to come and purchase tickets to watch Chelsea, given that they maybe have to book their holidays a long time in advance and it's difficult to plan. And again, I think this comes down to the kickoff times and the TV companies changing the dates as well makes it very difficult to know when you can book your time off to come. And I think, you know, calls for you know, different countries want friendlies to be played there. I think they are a big benefit for our overseas supporters who don't get the opportunity to see Chelsea otherwise. So it would be, you know, good as long as it doesn't affect us in the season proper. It would be again we'll pass that on to the club. So I think that's really all I've got to say. You may have questions about all sorts of other things which I can probably answer. We're hoping to send it out to you before the end of the week, the full survey, and hopefully it will show the trends as well over the last 4 years, so you can see how people's views have changed or not. And we'll also be talking to the club about it very shortly and presenting it to them. So if you've got any questions, ask, is it question time now?
Anyway? Yes, it is. Before we ask Celia any questions, I'd like to give her a round of applause, because I think, as always, she does a huge amount of work. And, you know, other than the huge amount of work that she does, I mean, in many respects, it's one of the most important things that we do as a trust all year, because it not only forms the basis of us deciding what the motions should be, which you all vote on, which gives us our mandate, but I think in terms of our visibility and the kind of press that we get from it usually, and the access that we get with the club because of it, it's probably the single most important thing that we do all year. So we're very lucky to have Celia, who is able to do such a great job. So massive thanks to her for that. I do have a question, actually, before we go to the floor, because somebody's put one on here. Kingy says, juvenile tickets need to be available throughout the stadium, not enough for junior members in the East Stand. And I remember you picking up on that. Do you want to add a bit to that?
Well, that certainly, it's always been there in the surveys, but it seems to be growing more in terms of people asking for that. Lots of people have put in their comments that they do need to be available outside of just the East Lower. And as I said, for two reasons, really. One, that it's very difficult to get hold of the tickets because there are a lot of season tickets in East Lower, family season tickets. And the other, that people that are, you know, I don't know, 14 plus, you know, probably want to all sit together and not sit with their mum and dad and the kids, you know. So I think it's something that we should talk to the club about. We have talked to the club about
it. Which is the roving mic? Is that the one?
Sorry, it's for... Johnston here again, just as part of my remit convey what's happening with the new stadium. I think that is part of the plan to enable people who do want to bring juniors into their part of the ground to make that facility more widely available.
Good.
Is that the long mic or was that the long mic? Is it? Right, so Mickey microphone. If anybody wants to ask a question, then that's the mic that they need. And it can be on anything. It doesn't have to be just the survey, but obviously if it is the survey, that's great. We've got Celia here.
Celia, just to touch on the survey, two things have been made to me by one of the bigger UK regional groups we have. They're actually more concerned now about because of the away tickets now that they're having to rotate across a very small allocation of tickets to every domestic away league game over a small number. And visiting one of our overseas groups last week, it was a day after they announced made a late announcement of the games for the next couple of months, and they made the point very strongly to me that they are fed up with games being announced beyond the late point because it causes a massive problem being in America, organising not just your holiday, but suddenly finding your flights have changed. And one of the people there made the point, if the NFL are capable of fixing dates for London, like there was a game at Twickenham today, people from New York, how difficult is it for them not... And as Tim Rolls said, Tim Rolls said... When I said to him that the club have announced the dates, the Premier League have said they will announce 6 weeks beforehand, and they failed the first time the six week thing came on. So we need to continually push it back at the club because people just may miss the game.
Ramsey here. Yeah, just a quick follow up on that, and I know I'm a cracked record, but the MLB is what, 162 games in a regular season? And they do sort out every start time for every game before the season starts. We need to make sure that the TV companies take more responsibility for setting that out at the start of the season, not as it goes along.
Yeah.
Because it's unfair to us, it's unfair to overseas supporters and everyone who wants to go to football.
Yeah, it's an absolute farce, Ramsey. Nothing less than an absolute farce. And if you think, I mean, the MLB may have 162 games, but of course, you know, most, forgive me, anybody in the room who likes American sport, but my view on American sport has always been that it was designed for TV. Mm. So to illustrate my point on that basis, you know, it's not as though the TV companies are kind of screwing it up for them, is it? You know, it's a farce. And I mean, this is, again, something that we pick up with when we go to the Premier League meetings and the other Premier League Trust meetings. And it's, you know, Tim's little project on kickoff times will hopefully... you know, lead to a collective, moan for want of a better word, but at least we'll be putting our case forward to the PL with some decent facts, knowing Tim. So watch this space on that. Anybody else? Dave. Yes.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to raise a couple of points about the new stadium and the visitors in particular. Because my understanding is that they'll all be coming in through the Bovril Gate. Mm-hmm. Now, what I wondered was, will they be coming in from the Fulham Road, or will they have access from the... There's a couple of other points. Will they have...
He's keen to answer, you can tell.
...access along the back of the West Stand? Also, is the club... taking into account the varying allocations for the different competitions from the whole shed at the moment for an FA Cup tie, for example, to maybe a wedge of 1,500 for a league game. I mean, has that been thought through? And just one more point, the safe standing, should that take effect, would the visitors also be entitled to a safe standing area? So I just wondered if you could... address those.
The entrance for away supporters at the box at the Bovril Gate is going to comprise of an underground entrance. So Chelsea supporters are going to have access 360 degrees around the ground without running into any away supporters. So the away supporters will access it from the Fulham Road, as they do now.
The
sorry to interrupt you, Dave. I beg your
pardon. That's all right.
I mean, clearly we play clubs from other parts of London and... Sorry. play other clubs from other parts of London and they travel by tube, so presumably Fulham Broadway, and I just wondered if they'd be allowed access through the new entrances round the back of the Matthew Hardings.
No, I think they're only going to have one entrance, and that's going to be round by the Bovril Gate.
Where are they going to be? Because it's quite interesting how they're going to be situated, because it's kind of not legislation, but it's quite strict as to where you can put fans in that respect. Because they're going to be all in the corner, aren't they?
Yeah, but the new legislation is going to ensure that, support, like, you know, when anybody who's been to Newcastle and found themselves sort of 20 flights of stairs up in the air, up there with on the moon behind the spot, Gary Cahill being fouled, that won't happen because, you know, the new rules are going to ensure that away support is pitch side, which will happen at Stamford Bridge. And as for the away allocations, the same system will be employed then as it is now. And there's not a lot, as home supporters, we can do about it, or even moan about it if we ourselves, when we get drawn away, want to take advantage of a full allocation. So it's, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
I think the other thing that you mentioned was safe standing.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be a safe standing section as well. And, you know, I mean, I'm hoping, as I said earlier, that it's going to be a domino effect, and all clubs will realise the advantages gained from safe standing. And let's face it, the atmospheres at games are always 10 times better if there's a good crew of away supporters to have a bit of banter with. So, I think most football-minded people in football are aware of that. You know, I know we've got someone in the room who works at the FA, and, you know, fair play to him for being football-minded. I don't know about the rest of them he works with. But as supporters, we're aware of that, and as are all football-minded people who work in football. Any other questions? Sorry, Judge. Can I just ask a question? We've all raised our glasses to Matthew Harding in memory of his sad loss 20 years ago yesterday. And I'd like us to raise our glasses to wish our glorious Mr. Abramovich happy birthday tomorrow. Because we wouldn't be here today with him. Mr. Abramovich, thank you.
Cheers.
Dave, have you got him a present? Okay. Are there any more? Okay, yeah. Don't tell me you've given him a fanzine, I know. Are there any more questions? We can have a couple of minutes, so if there's any more, please, now is the time to ask them.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kerry Dixon.
Right, okay. What I will say, a couple of things, bit of ush. Yeah, bit of ush. Obviously, welcome to Kerry. It's great to have you on board, and a little less chaotic than the first time you came to a trust meeting, as I recall. We broadcast this to through my little fancast channel. It's all right. It's only on radio, Kerry. It's radio. It's not TV. It's radio. So that really, I'm just explaining that. That's why we have the mic here. So the mic isn't a PA. It's not actually projecting to these people, but it is going down here and through there to the people that we've got listening here. Okay, so you'll need to hold the mic, and we've got a roving mic. So anybody wants to ask Kerry a question, Ramsey, also known as Mickey Microphone for this evening's proceedings, will hand it to you. So nobody wants to hear from me. They want to hear from Kerry. So without further ado, Kerry Dixon.
Don't be shy.
So, questions?
Any questions? Today, history, otherwise?
How would you have felt playing under Antonio Conte in that side today alongside Diego Costa?
Well, today would have been great, but if I was Costa, I'd have been a bit sick because I never got a goal. I was the type of player that I have to score, and people have accused me of, if we won 4-0 and I didn't score, I'd have a long face.
He missed a couple, didn't he? One, he got his, he couldn't get the ball from out of his feet when he was a foot away.
Dave, we're right. Not coaches, we're here for a Q&A. But it's not a knock at Dave, it's just an observation. But yes, Diego Costa for me has been our best player this year. But as I say, he would love to have scored. But listen, it's a 4-0 victory and, you know, every Chelsea player played their part. It's my first time this season actually looking at it close quarters. And I say close quarters in a certain way. You have to trust me on that one. There's some improved performances. People talk about JT not being out. People talk or being out of the team. And John was playing ever so well before his injury. And I thought he'd be an integral part of the side. But David Luiz, who many people had doubts with, for me, is playing quite well. Gary Cahill had a good game today. Matic was arguably my man of the match, and everyone will have a different one. But I hate the defensive midfield player, don't get me wrong, as a role. But Matic was a little bit more adventurous than normal, and I thought he played very well. There was a couple of times people got down the line and with the ball, and Matic was actually in the middle of the box. I don't know what would have happened if the ball come in, but nevertheless, he was there. Victor Moses was another one that stood out for me a little bit. His work rate, his discipline, and what Victor Moses brings to the side is something that's been recognised by Conte. And I will come to the question about Conte, because for me, the jury's still out. I don't know about him. I loved the part when he was saying to the fans, come on, get behind the team, when Manchester United fans were banging on whatever they could bang on and chanting, generally making a noise.
You mean the ones that were left, though?
Yeah. The ones that were left, yeah. They were making a noise. And it was great that Chelsea fans responded to that. And I think that will go down well with the fans. In terms of team selection, everyone will go about how great Conte is and how poor Jose Mourinho is. That's obviously not the case, looking at their history and what they've done and so on. Jose just took one, and he's not used to it. And we're the ones smiling tonight.
Yeah, two-part question. Best and worst manager you played under, and after you left, which manager would you most like to have played under?
He said, best and worst manager I played under, and after I left, who would I like to have played under? Best manager, John Neal. Sadly, he couldn't fulfil what he started because of his heart problems. Bobby Campbell also, sadly, who died. Well, both of them have died. But Bobby Campbell's a decent manager. I mean, not everyone's cup of tea. But he was in the second promotion side. He was manager of that. And Bobby was a great bloke and he was a good manager. And after going down and taking over from John Ollins, he did well to resurrect the team and bring it back in the manner that he did. Worst manager, it's a tough one, but it's John Ollins. obviously not that tough. No disrespect, third in the appearance makers for Chelsea, his first job, and he ruined the best side I ever played in. So, you know, sorry about that. Yeah, listen. For me, everyone wants to pass the buck onto someone else and pass the blame, you know. At the end of the day, these days, managers carry the can. And if you put your name to something, you stand and be counted. No good passing the buck onto Ernie Wally. The manager was John Ollins. If you're a manager, be a manager.
Second part of Dan's question was, who would you have liked to have played under as a manager, who you didn't?
Not Jose. Pulling off Joe Cole, pulling off Damien Duff at half-time. Tell him centre forwards to chase after fullbacks. You could get a Vinnie Jones off a ball in sight any time you want to go and chase fullbacks. If they got the ball in the box, I'd score goals. There's horses for courses, and it's how you play. This idea that's come into the game that everyone pressing from the front and so on, people running around, you know, the game has evolved, and television has been the cause of what's gone on. You know, managers gesticulating. Apparently, the best managers are the ones that run around with their arms flapping and doing all sorts of crazy things on the touchline. Well, if I saw one of my managers doing all them sort of things, I'd say, all you have to do is call me over and tell me what you want. You know, who's he talking to?
He's talking to the television cameras, you know. John Neal used to say, tell that, or send a message across, get and mark him, tell him to get tighter to him. It's not hard.
If you're talking about Antonio Conte, though, Kerry, you've got to remember that he is Italian and they do speak with their hands.
Yeah, you've got a point, and I take that into consideration.
Actually, there's a good link there, Dave, because somebody on the channels just asked a question. This is Bob. Bob Uzra, and Bob's from Fremont near San Francisco, and he's listening right now, which I think is quite impressive. And he says, "What does Kerry think of Jose telling Conte he was being disrespectful on the sideline?" Clearly, that must have come out in the post-match presser, which I missed. But
I actually think that. And I'm not going to knock Jose because I actually think he is what he is and he's our best ever manager in terms of trophies and what he's done for us. So I'm not going to knock him. But how many times have you heard managers distracting and creating an argument from what actually happened on the field? The last thing Jose would want is to talk about a 4-0 defeat away at his old club. So gets into a spat with Antonio Conte about gesticulating to the fans. There you go. The press have got their headlines and everyone talks about that for the next 2 days. The reality is Manchester United lost 4-0. Get on with it.
Well, I'll just take the mic over here a minute, Kerry, right? People are slagging off Chelsea because they only made a couple of signings, closed season, brought back David Luiz and they bought Marco.
Were you one of them?
Size. No.
No?
And I've never slagged any current player or manager at this club, nor would I. I'm here to support them, whoever plays. But I think Alonso's done very well. He's played, he's done all right. And I think David Luiz has done all right. Okay. And considering it's a squad game with 23 members in the squad, I think Conte seems to stick to the same 11. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't agree with it's a squad game because if you're good enough, you stay in the side. Frank Lampard was never on the bench. JT was never on the bench. Didier Drogba was very rarely on the bench because they were good enough week in, week out. And if they were fit, they played. I was never on the bench. I was a couple of times, you know, but not too often. And all the players who are worth their salt are not on the bench. The ones that get substituted, taken off, and be left out week in, week out, or called rotated, depending how you want to view it, are the periphery players. The wingers, the people, they don't take out, if you like, the spine of the side. They don't take out the players that matter. It's not a pun, trust me. But that's the way it is, and that's the way you look at it. Jose Mourinho never took off anyone, bar Duff, Joe Cole, Matter. The list is endless, but he didn't take off Frank. JT, Drogba. Just a thought.
Okay. So I'll dive in then. You mentioned TV. How'd you get on with refs? Because nowadays, every decision nowadays is, we all know they've got it wrong straight away. A minute in the ground, everyone's texting us. We can find out what you've got wrong. How he's cocked up here, he's got it wrong there. And there's a lot of pressure on refs. Was it a bit easier for you to accept their decisions in those days? Or did you just hate their guts like I do all the time?
No, I don't hate their guts. I never had a problem with referees. I was only booked, I think, 4 times in my life, never sent off. Unlike Gary Lineker, who's never sent off, never booked. But that's the story of my life, just a little bit shorter than Gary Lineker. referees... They're human beings. They're going to get things wrong. The advent of TV cameras all over the place at every angle has put more pressure on them. They're human beings. I don't want TV to be taken over like American football and every decision assessed and looked at by a panel in the stand. I want referees to be allowed to referee the game. The reason you talk about you hate them and all the rest of it, and everyone has the ref made a rick or didn't do it right. People will still argue, well, what's wrong with getting decisions right? But the day that it becomes a panel and TV cameras and people within ruling the game and running the game,
the game won't be what it is for me.
I mean, I actually agree. It's just we get so much information now. We know they've made a mistake. In the old days, we walk away from the game.
Human beings make mistakes.
You know, I thought that was a penalty, or that didn't look offside to me, or whatever. And you know, it's chip paper and all that.
Listen, I've heard TV pundits. They've both seen the same situation, both sitting there in the same studio, and they disagree with what the decision is. What happens if that? What happens if a referee said, and they refer it to a panel or someone looking at a TV camera? They go, that's not a penalty. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. Does it go to a vote? Meanwhile, players are playing football.
A few years ago, I was lucky enough to play against Kerry Dixon when we played them.
He's never been the same since.
No, they are.
Who, me or Dave?
we played Chelsea Old Boys. And, you know, that old adage that you hear in football, I like jokingly said it to Kerry Dixon. I went, come past here, Dixon, I'll break your legs. And, right, I never got to touch the old game. He was on me, right? He knew everything I was going to do. And they totally outclassed us. And, you know, we're a few years younger than them. And I just wonder, Kerry, it winds me up, something chronic, when I'm sitting next to somebody in the ground, and they're saying, whoever it is, Chelsea player, he's rubbish, get him off, blah, blah, blah. Would you agree with me? It's harder than it looks.
I would agree with you that it's everyone's opinion to go into the ground when they pay their money to say exactly what they want, providing it's not abusive. That's what is called a supporter. You lot won't agree on the game today. You'll all agree it's 4-0, and that's probably about all you'll agree on. Different people have man of the match. Different people have different men of the match. No, Dave, I think once you go into the ground and you're a supporter, you're allowed pretty much to say what you like, providing it doesn't infringe, as I've said, on abuse. It's no good when you think you disagree with someone who's sitting next to you and is very vocal. But I think all supporters are what they are. And the beauty of the game, when they go to the pub or they go to a restaurant after a game and they disagree and they see whatever, that's what makes the game. I don't know. It's just my thought, but pays your money, takes your chance, and some people like certain players. I mean, how the hell Pat Nevin got Player of the Year 1 year and I didn't get it is beyond me. But that's the beauty of people's opinions.
I was never good enough to play football.
Sorry.
Hi, Kerry. I was never good enough to play football, so I played rugby. But
it looks that way.
Thank you very much. So how do you feel about the footballers rolling around and all the rest of it when rugby, you just get on with it and don't show any sort of pain at all?
We bow down to you, sir. You're absolutely right. And listen, the rugby guys are fantastic. I can only take my hat off to them, the way they play the game. Someone said to me out there, you know, the likes of Tony Adams, the likes of John Terry, they'd give you a whack, give you some stick, take one back. Afterwards, shake your hand, have a pint in the player's bar, say, see you next game. They'd walk out, give you a crack, a dig. And listen, that's how it should be played. That's how it is. That's the game we know. Not breaking people's legs, not going over and above, but give no quarter for your team and stand your ground. And rugby players do that. And I think certain footballers need to learn that.
Kerry, as a Man United fan and a guest of a Chelsea fan, what, having watched today.
Leave him alone, he's licking his wounds, go on.
Hold on. I was here in 1973 when Bobby Charlton's last game here. So it's a long time ago. Best of my idol. But with people like Paul Pogba, cool. The money you paid for him. Do you think there should be a salary cap on what you pay for people? Because, don't be funny, he played today, he was absolutely... Can I swear?
No.
He was absolutely crap. He was diabolical. I think, for 98 million, what has he done? He was no better than someone, one of the young kids that cost nothing.
I don't know who...
Like say, it's nice to have a proper Man United fan here with a proper London accent.
Listen, before we give him stick around upon him, that's how I grew up. Every Man United fan had a London accent. But all right, but yeah,
I'm from the old school when footballers like I've watched your Chopper Harris kick lumps of...
out of everyone.
Out of Bestie. But Bestie stayed on his feet. Yeah.
Correct.
And then unless he had to go over, he would stay on his feet and score a goal. And then Chopper Harris would say, fair enough, I can't do nothing about him. He was too good.
Yep.
But it ain't like that these days, is it? They'll roll over and do their four cartwheels and two somersaults and look up and say, I want a penalty or I want a free kick.
Yep, I've got to say, we've had our fair share of them at Chelsea as well. You know, and no disrespect to anyone, Didier, first year, goodness me. So even the fans, not say Dave's looking at me again, they didn't turn on him, but they thought that Didier get up, and because that situation, he went on to be what he is to all Chelsea fans, and quite rightly so. But what was brought home to him and other people, we, the public, and I, Manchester United, West Ham, Arsenal, we don't want that in the English game. No, it's not what we were brought up. It's not what we expect. But you can't help the Continentals who come in and are brought up in a different way, in a different style of football. They do learn when they come into our Premier League, Division One, I like to call it, but it's Premier League, that this is the way and this is what is expected. I have to agree with you. Ron said he wouldn't even get a game today, you know? Maybe. Well, what he also said, he said, do you think you'd get a game today? Any of your team would get a game today? He said, yeah, just the nine of them. That's because we're all between 60 and 65. Yeah. Ron actually believes that, which is fair enough. He believes that. Rolling over's not right. Pogba, 98 million. Perhaps I got it wrong, but who done the transfer because 18 million missing? Well, I thought it was 80 million, but anyway, if a Manchester United fan is more informed than me, 98 million's fine. Listen, we won't ruin... I know, Pogba was crap today. And listen, for a man, I don't necessarily think that a transfer fee should be something that is saddled with a player's expectations. No, it's not. If you bought him for £30 million and he played crap, is it any less than a player that was bought for 98 million? No. The common denominator is that he played crap. You've got to accept that. There were certain times last season when one of our best players, if not our best, Eden Hazard, played crap, and along with a few others. It isn't about necessarily what the transfer fee is. It's about playing for your club and having a bit about you and making sure you don't play like that again.
Okay. Kerry. Have you played tennis since your England days? And how would you score a goal against Argentina playing for England?
I haven't got a clue how I'd score against Argentina. I haven't played tennis, hence six stitches in my eye there, playing John Barnes when I understood the question. A day before I was due to possibly get a game. Nevertheless, I think Mark Hately retained his place in that particular position. My tennis injury didn't help the night before. I was just trying to keep myself a little bit fit because I weren't getting much game time with England and went for a game of tennis. But unfortunately, this gentleman knows as much as me. He'll fill you lot in a bit later on, for those of you that don't know. Argentina? If I'd have played, I know. Lineker got... Yeah, I know. Anyone else?
Greatest Chelsea player apart from yourself.
Greatest apart from myself. Good job you said that. It all depends. Franco Zola, arguably for me, but in terms of skill, but the man that is from midfield took 3 years longer than me to become our greatest ever goal scorer. I think Frank Lampard.
How pleased were you that Frank Lampard put a little bit in your latest book?
Ecstatic.
Top man, isn't he, Kerry?
No, he's not bad. Listen, I've already said. Bobby Tamlin said I was the man that kept him in business. I'm the idiot that never. I should have put Frank's record, or the record, out of reach with the 3.5 years that I had. I don't know how far this, where this is going, but when I was told they had a 2 million strike force coming and I'm going to be in reserves, if I'd have known it was Mick Arthur and Robert Fleck coming, I'd have stayed.
Who was the worst player you played with?
There was loads in that time. There was, you can start with John Miller, John McNaught. I don't know if you remember. So, I mean, poor old John McNaught. Doug, I mean, Big Doug. I mean, how he won the Cup Winners' Cup with Aberdeen. In that Arsenal game you're talking about, Viv Anderson, when I went with England, he says, "What have you signed at left back?" That thing hit me on the halfway line. I went 6 foot up in the air. He was nowhere near the ball. And sure enough, he wasn't Big Doug, you know, but I'm not going to say he's the worst because he was a big unit.
He also had a great song, Kerry. Which
worst player? God, there was loads. I mean, how far do you want to go back? It's a bit unfair.
Did you play with Cundy?
Nothing wrong with Jason.
I'm only joking. You know that show we did on Friday? I dug out the old YouTube clips of those matches. We talked about the 2-1. You corrected me. You were right. And the 1-0 up at United in 86. And I watched the clip. And Doug did one of his famous Doug tackles, which you're absolutely right. Nowhere near the ball. Bloke flying up in the air. And then sitting there going, what? What? Absolutely.
If you see this guy, anyone that don't know, he was 6 foot. 3 or 4. He had one tuff in his head. It was like he had legs like a rugby player. Goodness me.
Right, has anybody got any other? Yeah, Charles, wonderful. Well, I mean, how are you doing for time, Kerry? Because, I mean, it's 25 past 8, so we should probably put a limit on it, really.
It's normally early for me.
What's your favourite moment as a Chelsea player?
Favourite moment as a Chelsea?
And worst moment?
Worst moment? Worst moment was being sub at Watford after rumours went out about a possible transfer request, which I have to say it was talked about with John Ollins, but Ken was up the Amazon on his boat. I think a bit of politics flying around. It's all in the book if you want to buy it. Just a pun. Best ever moment in a Chelsea shirt was that Highbury moment, I'm afraid. But the second one was the Grimsby one when we clinched the second division, the goal before. It was because it wasn't expected. Everyone seems to forget that the side 89-90, we went on a 26-game unbeaten run and we were a strong side and everyone was waiting for it to happen. When it eventually happened against Leeds at home, it wasn't quite the same as the Leeds at home first time round. It was, I think Johnny Bumpsy got one, but we won 5-0 the first one, and crowd on the pitch, and the euphoria of it all, and then Manchester City, and then Grimsby, then Arsenal. I mean, 4 games in them 2 years was quite incredible. But I've always said that my best, out of the 9 years I was at Chelsea, the best 2 years were the first two.
Go on, Nick, go on. Yeah. We'll play Middlesbrough away one game, and the game got called off at the last moment. And you were playing with Southampton that day at
Nottingham Forest. Yeah. I knew he was going to say that.
Did you realise
there were Chelsea fans? It was strange.
Chelsea fans supporting you that day.
Sorry to interrupt, but I knew it because I found it the strangest thing. Yeah. I wasn't very well liked at Southampton. David Speedy even less. But nevertheless, I was playing, and people were cheering Southampton from behind in the Forest End, from behind the goal. I'm thinking, when we had a corner. And what I looked at it, there was a fair group of you. Don't worry, Kerry, we're Chelsea. All the Nottingham Forest fans all around and were looking. They're wondering what's going on. A Chelsea in their end and all that. But I thank you for that. It's much appreciated. Tony Adams was the toughest ever player I played against individually. You had Bruce and Pallister, which were decent. Hanson and Lawrenson, they were a good side, Liverpool at the time. We put up some decent performances against them. Shorten and Briggs were assassins at Oxford, for those of you that remember that. The best ground I ever played against, the sun is right. Three-Point Lane, my most favourite away ground. You thought it would be Old Trafford, which is second, but nevertheless, Three-Point Lane is everyone's favourite that day. Even Tony Cascarino got a hat-trick.
Okay, but outside of all your Chelsea moments, how special was the Luton semi-final for you?
Well, listen, even including all the times, the Luton semi-final was a disaster for me in terms of football because at the age of 32, it was the last time I was ever realistically going to make an FA Cup final. And it was the most humbling moment of my footballing career because of what people like yourself made it for me. Couldn't say any more. The reaction after the game was quite incredible. You were going to Wembley to play Manchester United in the final, having been beat, having won 2-0, courtesy of two Gavin Peacock goals. To be singing my name, the amount of fans that were doing that, I say no more. It was the most humbling day of my life in terms of what football is all about.
I think that's it, Kerry. Can we just say thank you so much for coming along? Kerry, thank you. And there's a... Lovely to see you, mate. And there's a few lads... We stuck away some books here earlier because there's a few lads who wanted to buy the book and get it signed, right?
Sure.
And lady. And lady. I'm terribly sorry. I didn't know it was you, T.
We're going to... anybody else want any books? We're going to... you're going to come down to Everton, mate.
Yeah? I'll come down, hopefully, to Everton.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.